Blog Talk Radio.
Now tuned in to the mother greatest.
All right. Yeah.
Hey, happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Let's Chat. I'm Miss Felicia. I'm here with my right hand, the fabulous Miss Tony. We got an awesome show today. We're talking that talk about big dreams, small pockets. We have author and publisher J.M. Benjamin, as well as radio host and PR rep Catherine Waddell. How was your week, T?
Oh, girl, it has been busy. You know, it just rolled over. We had a great time last weekend at the AAMBC Awards in Atlanta, Georgia. We did a lot of great networking, picked up some awesome, material to just go over, gave us great tips. Lit Dish was the bomb, both the female as well as the male panel. So it was great. We learned a lot with those wonderful ladies, Victoria Christopher Murray, as well as Rashana Tate Billingsley. And the men's panel, man, they held their own leash. They really did.
Yes, they did. They really did. And it was a fabulous time in Atlanta. We learned a lot. We experienced a lot. I think that the best part is the networking and being able to, you know, be with and experience people and different things. And on yesterday, I was able to network just by chance with someone, and they were able to share some of the things that worked for them as far as their literary journey. And, again, everything is not going to work for everybody. You know, everybody's has to find their own niche. However,
right.
I think that you can learn and get jewels from everybody. And you can find out, oh, I might want to try this. I might want to try that. I was saying that we had Quan on the show the year before last, and he talked about guerrilla marketing. And so, you know, everybody would go out and get a guerrilla marketing book. But when you think about marketing and literature and promotion in literature, it's really hit and miss. You have to find out what works for you. You have to understand your audience, and you have to understand that particular market. So if it's kids, you market that book differently. You're able to get it out differently. If it's romance, everything is different. So you really have to think outside of the box and be really, really, really ready to hustle. Because, you know, a lot of times when you start out, you got those small pockets, but you got big dreams. It's like, I want to do this, I want to do that. And then you have the people that skimp on the important stuff. And, you know, Rashana Tate Billingsley pointed out, you don't want to skimp on the important stuff, the editing, the cover. Those things are a necessity. So you may have to wait until your book, until tax time, and, you know, to get everything situated. But if you have a publisher, most of the time they take care of that. And you don't have to worry. Your job is just to make sure the content is on point. And you work with your editor, on that process and making sure that you guys come together and produce a proper product for the readers.
Mm-hmm. That's so true, Alicia. And I think the bottom line is that you have to have a relationship, and with whether you're independent publishing house, you have to have a relationship with all the people that's going to help you get your product out there. You know, your editor, your graphic artist, your everything that's related to getting it out. You have to have some type of relationship with. You have to have dialogue and communication, and you all got to kind of be on the same page. And that's so important. That team is so important, because without it, you could be fumbling in the wind, girl.
I definitely agree with that. So with that, you know, we consider ourselves part of your team. We love the platform that we provide. It's a free platform because we want to give authors a way and artists a way for people to be able to hear and feel their passion. A lot of times people feel it through your work, and which creates that word of mouth. But what if you're new and nobody knows you? You know, so it's important that we have these platforms like the blog talk shows or even blogs themselves, because people get to be, are still able to experience your passion, why you do what you do, what burns you, what gets you going to continue to keep doing what you're doing. So if you want to sponsor Let's Chat, you can send your request to The Chat Radio Show. We have two@gmail.com. We have two sponsorship packages, an individual and a company. We do get a lot of publishers that would like their authors on our show. So if you would like to help our cause and help our show to continue to be free, feel free to send us that request so that you can sponsor Let's Chat and it can continue to be the platform that it is. I'm so excited because we have done so much. We've been on here for 3 years, and we, you know, the growth from the very first show, you know, it used to be Honor Thy Author, you know, and it just used to be online on Facebook. And so it's grown and it's changed and it's evolved into such a great platform. We do so many great things. We have so much fun. We touch people. We're able to educate people, and I just love that. So with our educational portion, you know, we share resources here on Let's Chat. So the resources that I'm sharing today are for those people that write sex scenes. See, you know that is our biggest pet peeve. We always talk about that. We do that debate. Who writes the better sex scene, a male author or a female author? And I think that sometimes, depending on the author and their experience, some sex scenes are just plain old dry. They are dry. There's lack of emotion. You can't get into it. Some of them got them big old huge words. You thinking about the word more than you thinking about the scene. And so I said, it's gotta be some kind of resource for that. And there is. I found three resources on Amazon. How to Write a Sizzling Sex Scene by Elizabeth Engstrom. And this book talks about, and I like these three books that I picked because it kind of gives the meat and potatoes, but it talks about why sex scenes. Is it erotica or is it pornography? So it explains, it educates, it breaks it down. This is a fabulous tool. So I have 90 words for nice writers. Sometimes you want to write a naughty sex scene. You know, my philosophy on a sex scene is, if it's going to be nasty, let it be nasty. If not, send them to Starbucks. Ain't nobody got time for that. You know, so 90 words for nice writers. It gives you it's a sexual and spanking start. So it gives you different words that you can use depending on what it is you're trying to express, which is awesome. Oh. That is awesome because, you know, those are those words.
I might just pick that up because. See, you started
yes,
these. I'm trying to be good. And at the beginning of the presentation, you use sex and dry. They don't go together at all.
that is her book. I got these books off of Amazon, and this another one is How to Write a Hot Sex Scene, and it just gives tips from multiple published erotic romance authors. So this is like a, I would say like an anthology of tips from different authors, or probably what works for them, how it works, yada, yada, yada. They have Real Ugly, Five Sexy Scenes to Rev Up Scenes, Boys Will Be Boys, The Law of Attraction, Writing the Fine Line Between Erotica and Porn, How to Write Convincing Fetish and Niche Market Sex, Sexy Sentences, Fighting Sex, Do You Think You Can Kink? I mean, all awesome, awesome, awesome. And these are all, those are actually all romance authors, and I believe that those are their different books. And they just, you know, highlight and talk about those things. So that is awesome. We have our first guest.
You always get me in trouble. I can go way left with this conversation. I'm going to be good.
Oh, that book is by Shoshana Evers. That book is by Shoshana Evers. And I got those just off Amazon. So if you're writing a sex scene and you're struggling, I'm going to need you to go on Amazon. I'm going to need you to get yourself some assistance. Research, research, research. If you can't do actual research, you can read on some research. But please don't bring any more dry, whack sex scenes in your book.
The oh, my end. God, bring a guest in before I get in trouble.
We have our fabulous first guest, Catherine Waddell. I wonder what she feels about this. What are we talking about right now? Hey, Catherine, how are you?
Hi, Catherine.
I'm good. How are you?
Help us with the out, please.
Listen, I need the post to help me settle an argument. Do the word sex and dry go together? Ever.
I couldn't help myself, girl. I couldn't help myself.
I was like, she's so right. That sounds like bad sex all day long. I can't have it.
Yes, girl.
Y'all are so funny.
At least you get me going. And then she's trying to blame me.
I'm saying, you pick up a book, you know, you expecting it to be, you know, all the way through, and they got the drama, they got everything, and you all in, and they get to the sex scene, and you're like, what is this mess? It's just going to be nasty,
let them be nasty.
If not, send them to Starbucks.
I have to say, I have been fortunate not to run into that. So I don't give me any names because I don't even want to have a bad novel sex life. I just don't want to have. That's the only place like forever, never. You should never have a bad sex life in the book. Never in real life. Maybe you run into some real life stuff, but in the book, I should never have bad sex ever.
Uh-huh.
So I just I apologize to whoever encountered that in the book. I apologize for that author. I'm sorry. but I'm surprised that there are sites that help you make these steamy, you know, sex sites. Wow.
I told them. There are ways to get your content. You can actually get your content by creating your content yourself. You can watch porn. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're creating a sex scene. That means that you need to take
involved.
It and create it and just, you know, take it so you can go, you can watch porn. You can
you're not helping me
research,
at all.
You need to, you need to add
porn.
Any potatoes. But no more dry wax sex scenes, please.
Please, no. Oh, my God.
No more.
Woo, I needed that.
It's going up. Help me settle an argument. I'm posting it right now.
Absolutely. Help me settle an argument. Then pop the link in there so that they can call in.
Participate.
This needs to be said. This is the elephant in the
okay.
room. This needs to be said today.
That is one.
We're chatting about it. Let's chat. Now, Catherine, for all of those that don't know who you are, tell everybody a little bit about yourself and the things that you do.
Well, first
with your
of all,
radio
thank
show
you.
And your company. You say,
thank you for having me. I was saying thank you for. I said first of all, thank you for having me back on the show. Y'all kind of like me a little bit over here. I like you all too. What I ultimately do is help people to live their passion and make money doing that. With the radio show, I get to be a teacher. That means I get to tap into you and pull out the best in you. You already have a gift. I'm helping you to mold it. That's what I do. With This Needs to Be Said, I use that platform for business owners to teach what they know, because as we all know, a lot of our businesses are online. So how can people go by and window shop you if you're online and they don't know how to find you? It's not like going to the mall. So if they're on This Needs to Be Said, people can get a sample of how you flow, you know, what your demeanor is like. Can they build a relationship with you? Would they like to work with you? They get to window shop you. And many of my commentators have gone on to get bigger speaking engagements or get speaking engagements at all. I've had people who had never been on radio and never been interviewed, and they've gone on to do things that, you know, I hadn't done yet. Like, I haven't written a book yet. I'm working on one, but I hadn't written a book yet. But some of them have written several books, gone on to do speaking engagements, have gone on to do voiceover work. One lady was like, my voice isn't for radio, but she did more voiceovers for my show than I was doing over the past 2 years. So it's like an incubator. It's like a training camp for people to, you know, really to be able to express themselves and stretch their wings. But I'm a teacher all day long, but helping you get uncomfortable, helping you say what needs to be said in your business, and helping you to turn that into a profit for you.
Those are some great things you just gave us, and I hope our listening audience has been taking notes, because, you know, that's a wealth of information. And you're right, sometimes you just need that platform. This is Tony. You know, I try to remember that, say who I am. They say Alicia and I sound alike, but, you know, you're offering a platform, and it's great when you can see the ones that have come through, their growth, you know, because as they grow, you grow.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know?
It's exciting. And I call my training, my coaching for people is Live Your Passion Coaching. It's just that simple. I want you to always think about, you know, whether you're going on vacation or you're spending time with your kids or you're working in your business, this is you mapping out that life you said you wanted to live. So it all came the radio show was an accident, but I've always been a teacher, so it just gave me a stumbled upon my classroom. So that's what I like to look at it as.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, did you see yourself doing this as you were growing up? Is this something that you've always wanted to do?
What, teach or talk?
Both.
Both. Well, talk as long as it's like me and you, not on radio. Like, I never saw myself on radio, and I never saw myself on TV. But I've always talked, and I've always been a teacher. I always love stuffed animals. Still have stuffed animals to this day. So if I need to have a board meeting, I can get them together and talk to them. But I've always talked. Always, I'm so serious. I'll send y'all a picture of the board members in a little bit. But I've always found myself as a teacher, and I love it. It's not about me telling you, Tony, do it my way, Leach, do it this way. No, what do you think about it? Like, when I do to help me sell an argument, it's not about what I think. It's not about what I think at all. I mean, usually I think contrary to what everybody's posting anyway, because they either go one way or the other. But it's about what are people thinking, getting them talking, and if we get you talking, we get you engaged, then we can, you know, find out, you know, what makes you tick, what makes you laugh, what is it that you really want to do? Because after we play together a little bit, they're ready to, you know, let you know, well, I was thinking about, you know, starting this business, or I was thinking about writing a book, or I've written a book and I can connect them with you all. Hey, I know where you can go get an interview. I know where you can go and connect with some great ladies to work on your project, you know. And I love that, because I love putting the pieces together like matchmaking. But I only saw myself as a teacher. I did not see myself on radio or thought about hearing myself, because my voice was not my best feature. Was not.
You sound great. Don't just check that off your list,
now,
girl.
Look, now, but I remember this voice they claim is sexy now. They were like, why does she sound like a boy? And I was like, oh, my, so it make you self-conscious to even talk, you know. But now it's like, oh, the same guys that was picking on me. Hey, Catherine, don't hate me now.
After fact, right?
Saying, hey, me now. Yeah. Got me dealing with low self-esteem in junior high school. Don't you talk to me now.
Now, this is Alicia.
Right.
I have a question. Now, when you decided to venture out and do this thing, you actually just quit your job. Who was most supportive of your choice to just make it happen?
Nobody financially. And my mom pretty much just said, if you're going to do it, do it. But nobody was there to finance it. I don't have a husband. I've never been married. My baby daddy paid child support, but it's not enough to cover bills for you to be walking off your job. So to draw a clear picture for you, I did not have enough money saved up. But the biggest support was my mom, but she didn't know what to say. So that lets you know how much support I had, which was none. Because my mom's always worked a job. If she's worked at, if she's tried to have a business, it's always been a side business, so nothing she had to depend on. So it was, you could do it, but you always can fall back on your money from work kind of thing. So I didn't, nobody knew how to support me. That's what it was. That was the problem. Nobody knew how to support me. You can go do this, but you got to figure it out. So I could say out loud, I'm starting my own business, and nobody looked at me crazy until I was borrowing gas money. And they was like, wait a minute, I thought this thing was supposed to work. So they supported me until I needed to borrow some money or come stay with them or borrow their car or anything that was going to inconvenience them, because you're supposed to, you know, start making money right away if you're going to quit your job. That's what people think. And I even thought that too. But my biggest supporter was my mom, which was no support, to answer your question. Mm-hmm. Only because she didn't know how.
Right. Well, you know, that's serious, because sometimes you yourself may not know what type of support you really need.
You better,
you know,
say that. You're right. You better, you know, say that. So, I thought it was going to be magic. I thought it was a, this was a sign, and I thought everything was going to, you know, fall into place, come together. No, no.
Right.
No.
It's a journey, girl. It's a journey.
Mm-hmm.
And you, as I have to say, you arrive in levels. You know, it's a journey, and you know, you have to arrive in levels. So you'll get there, though.
Absolutely.
Eventually.
And I think sometimes, absolutely, but sometimes when things happen, and they happen so abruptly, they happen out of the blue, you don't have an explanation for them, you are thrown off at first, just briefly, till you're able to get, till, like you said, things level off and you're able to get your balance. How were you able to, like, conquer that moment in your life where you were a little off balance? You know, you made a choice, you made a decision, you got to stick with it, you got kids, you had bills. How were you able to get through that?
A lot of crying. But then in that, I had started a job. I created a job. There's a difference between starting a business and creating a job. I had created a job cleaning houses. So I was able to sustain myself, because when I left my job that was paying me on time every 2 weeks, I had to fall back on something I created before, which was cleaning houses. And it's not really hard to find people who will let you clean their house. So I had to figure out how to have enough energy to do my business, because you can get caught up in paying your bills and say, okay, I got to do what's necessary and not focus on your business. So a lot of crying, a lot of, you know, feeling frustrated. Am I going to have to go back on a job? You talk to yourself. You feel what you're feeling. You do what is going to make you money. Don't feel small about it. Oh, you told people you're going to, you know, start this business, but you're over here working this job. Well, make sure that job makes room or allows room for you to work on your business, or you're always going to be working on that job. So I had to learn how to organize my time, because at one point I was cleaning houses from sunup till past sundown, and I was not working on my business. I had to catch myself. So it was a lot of realigning, but just being aware. Be aware. So if you hurt, feel it. If you feel like crying, go ahead and cry and get it out the way. If you're feeling stupid, go on and feel that, because you're going to have some times when you feel smart. But do something that's going to make you money. But if you're serious about your business, make sure you are investing in your business some time that's going to move it forward each day. And when you find that you're off track, just realign yourself and say, oh, I hadn't worked on my business in a week. I got to get back on that, or else I'm always going to be on this job, which is not my goal. So it's a lot of self-talk, too. You got to talk to yourself. Because other people, they just looking at you waiting for you to fail. I knew you shouldn't have done that. Go back and get a job. So you have to really talk to yourself.
Exactly. They're just waiting. They're sitting there waiting for you to fail so that they can say, well, you know, this is what it is.
You tried it.
You know, I think, right, when I had got laid off, well, I got laid off because the company closed and left. And I was content not to work in the same industry. And I remember people kept telling me, you need to go to such and such place. You need to go there. You need to go back to work. But I held out. I was like, I'm not going back in that industry. I'm going to do, this is what I want to do. And I think that a lot of times we don't realize to speak is to create. Even in prayer, prayer is still speaking. You're speaking something out there.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be careful what you say. You have to be clear about what you ask for. And whatever you're speaking, you have to speak with pure passion. But if it's a one-sided, you're going to get what you ask for, but it's going to be one-sided because you didn't think about anything else. So it's important that you're clear, clear about what you want, how you want it, when you want it, where you want it, all of that. And I was like, this is the job I want. This is what I want to do. And I just kept saying the same thing over and over and over. And I ended up getting it, you know. And then when, because a lot of times we think seasonal things are to be permanent, you know, and we sometimes make permanent things seasonal. Like, we don't pay attention. We don't discern, like, which is which a lot of times. So sometimes jobs are seasonal, depending on what your what your journey is meant to be. So now, you know, I work from home. I created my own job. I created my own lane. And it's like, I don't see myself working for somebody else. I was going to get my master's, and I decided not to get it. For one, it was a $40,000 price tag. I was like, oh, $40,000, you know, that's a lot for a piece of paper. But when I went there, the lady asked me, because, you know, they have the guidance counselors, but then they have, like, the job, you know, they have a little job reference centers there, too. And she said, what company do you see yourself working for? And I was like, nobody. And she just looked at me like, what are you doing here then?
What you mean? How you going to pay this loan?
What are you doing here then?
Right,
because it was like, who do you see yourself working for? What company do you see yourself working for? I was like, I don't see myself working for nobody. I see myself working for me.
Yeah, she's like, how are we going to get our money back? What you mean?
That's so true. But, Kathy, you know, this is Tony. You said something that was key, and I never really thought about it until you said it, which was creating a job and starting a business. Sometimes people can think they interact, they go one and one, but you've learned that they are two separate entities. And, and has that been the hardest walk that you've encountered?
Yeah, here's the thing. Like, I think all businesses start out as a job because you're doing everything, right? But that first time you outsource something and you let somebody, I don't care if they're scheduling your social media, you are creeping into the world of having a business because you're to oversee the stuff, not do everything. There's some stuff you're going to want to do, but not everything. When you go to bed tired in the beginning because you've created this job, it's rewarding. But when I had to think about, am I going to go hard like this every day, all the time? The truth is no. My body makes me take a day off every Tuesday or Wednesday of the week. When my body, I feel it. Now, I can have some appointments. I'll do my appointments on that day, but I try not to book too many appointments. But if my body say, kiddo, you need to Netflix and not Netflix and chill. You need to be by yourself. You need to Netflix and catch you a nap or whatever. You need to rest. You need to rejuvenate. Then I do it. I don't push through it. Oh, I'm just going to work through this and I'm good. Because what you'll do is you'll push through it and keep working and you still don't take that time off. So I've learned to listen to my body. But every business starts out as a job. And when you start outsourcing the little tasks that you're doing and you start overseeing and you're checking in with people and you're having meetings, okay, did we get this done? You have a marketing team. And let me tell you, having a marketing team sounds good and fantastic and huge, but it could be you and one other person, or you and two other people, and maybe it's two other business owners, and you both, and all three of you are helping each other to think of ways to market your business. And marketing has to happen 365 days a year. It happens all the time, not just when you have a sale. So when you have a job, you say, okay, well, I can go clean these houses real quick, so I'm going to throw something up on Facebook, and people are going to give me some money. I can get $300 to $700 real quick. And it's not hard to do, but it's hard work. It's hard on your body because you're getting down on people's floors. And some people, you know, and it, whatever it is, whether you're baking, but cleaning was my thing. So some people ain't, you know, they don't just like how you clean. They want you to do some extra stuff or some different stuff or a different way. But when you're constantly marketing, sometimes you can't take all the people that's coming to you. And when you're in business, there's a machine. So when you're in a business, think of machines. So there's a bunch of machines working, a bunch of systems you put in place. So that's the difference between creating a job and being in business. But your business starts out as a job. And that's good, so you know how everything works, how it's supposed to look. So when you hire me and I'm not doing the right thing and I'm telling you, oh, Leash, Tony, I've been working hard. I've been sweating. You'd be like, no, because I've done this myself and I know it don't take that long. I know it's supposed to look like this at this point. So you know if I'm lying or not, you know. And not that you want to call people a liar, but you've done it, so you know what it should look like. And you can tell me that, Catherine, I've done this, so I know what it should look like. So when I check in with you, it should be real quick. So you've created a machine if you can get me to actually do what you've trained me to do. That makes sense?
It really does. And it's, you know, that's what I love about our show. You get to hear other people's perspective on things, and sometimes that you may not even think about. Like you've said some things tonight that you know in the back of your head, but to hear it verbalized by someone else in a different way, it kind of makes you sit back and say, she has a point there, you know.
Absolutely.
So I love what you're saying, and you are just filled with information, and it's just not something that's over your head. It can relate to everybody in all walks of life. It's what's even better.
Absolutely. And it really goes with our topic. Our topic is big dreams and small pockets. And that was a prime example of, you know, having big dreams and small pockets. You have to do what you have to do. At the time, that's part of the hustle. And I think in anything you want to do, you have to hustle, especially in the book industry. It is a hustle. You have to make sure that you are planning at all times, how am I going to do this, and thinking outside of the box, not just being ordinary, but being extraordinary. So you do have to think outside of the box. You have to think of ways to make yourself unique. And the way you did it, you did what you had to do.
Yep.
And now look at you. You have your radio show, you have your TV show, you have your PR company, and you are just doing so many things to help people understand and get to whatever their dreams are. So I think that is so awesome. Now we do a launch for that. We appreciate you coming on the show today. You know, we talked about this book you're supposed to be writing. You know, me and Miss Tony still waiting on this book you're supposed to be writing. We're going to keep speaking it out there
until you actually manifest this thing. It's coming. The first one's going to be really simple. It's going to be Help Me Settle an Argument. I did a mock-up book cover for it, but it's called Help Me Settle an Argument. And I pulled all the ones I've done, and I got to tell you, there's going to be, like, more than one. But it's going to be that one, and I'm going to definitely do one on business tips. But those are going to be business ones. But you've given me some tips about some naughty sites to go on to make some steamy sex scenes. So, I'm not saying they got these black dry sex scenes out there. They're not researching. They're not doing nothing.
That's why I gave them three resources today. The struggle is real sometimes with the ends in these books. They need that assistance.
And she said porn like four times, get it.
Okay.
Participate in it.
Yes, and you know, Catherine, if you need me to be me, you know, I have a little slick tongue. No pun intended.
Okay, all right.
See, y'all, I'm going to go to my corner.
Oh, nobody sent you over there. Nobody sent you over there.
Well, we want you to shout out all of your social media. Absolutely. Shout out your social media. Shout out both of your shows, when they're on, where they air, and any events that you have coming up before you head out of the chat room.
Oh, gosh. A lot. I want to make it simple. Go to thisneedstobesaid.com. You can definitely catch us on Facebook and Twitter. I live there the most. LinkedIn is another place that you'll find me a whole lot. And Instagram, but thisneedstobesaid.com. If you go out to the site right now, we're going on a cruise next year. And, ladies, y'all should come. Y'all definitely should come and do a writer's workshop. Let's talk about doing that. But next year, we're going on a cruise. We're going to be gone for 4 days. We're going to Key West and Cozumel, Mexico. So for some people who have not gone on a cruise before, a four-day cruise is pretty good. And we're going to have some taping on the ship. We're going to do a TV show taping on the ship. And we're gonna have some activities there. We're going to do where people can sit with me and pick my brain about living their passion. That's going to be included just by you being on the ship. And then if you want to play in your own cruise or family reunion or whatever, my travel agent, he's going to be on board with us. So you can sit and talk with him. That's there. And then we're going to have a networking cocktail party. But the television show, still to be determined. My target is in July for this to air here in Charlotte, North Carolina, and then it'll be on YouTube, on my YouTube channel, so that you can see it there if you're not in my area, which a lot of people are not. But I'm on each weekday as far as the radio. I'm on each weekday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for This Needs to Be Said, and I've decided that Monday's going to be for motivation. Tuesdays is going to be pet peeves when it comes to business. Wednesdays are going to rotate. We're going to talk finances, business, relationships, and health on one Wednesday a month. And then on my Thursdays, we talk business empowerment. And so a woman will come and tell you, and it doesn't matter if she's at the beginning, middle, or if she's been in business for years, but she comes and shares her story and gives nuggets, just like I do. So the classroom is wide open for people to share. And these ladies are even allowing me to share their blog posts on my blog site. So they've written stuff, and they're going to let me repost it. And, oh, my gosh, there's one called The Rules of Situationships. I can't wait to read it again when I release it on my blog. But there's a lot where this needs to be said that's going on. But I want people to be confident in their business, know that whatever they set out to do that they can do. And like you ladies were talking about, find out what's unique in your business. And the things that you think are unique probably aren't the things that people come to you for. So ask people. Anybody who's ever come to you and done business with you, ask them, why do you hire me? Why do you work with me? And you'll be surprised, and that will help you find what's unique for you. So I'm at thisneedsbesaid.com, and I'll be posting stuff up there. We're going to have a bunch of help me sell an argument kind of excursions, day trips. So it's a lot. I love, as y'all can tell, I love to talk, but I want the conversation. I want people to be able to have that freedom of talking and expressing themselves. So that's what I got going on. I got going on.
That's some awesome
Absolutely.
Stuff.
Absolutely.
For you, I know, just added my two cents to your post on about the dryness. So I put my two cents
in. Did you go in here and add it? Good.
Yes. You are always welcome in the chat room anytime. For those that are just tuning in, you tuned in to Let's Chat. I am Miss Leisha. You know, I got my right hand, the fabulous Miss Tony. We're talking to talk about big dreams and small pockets. We had our first guest, radio host and PR rep, Catherine Rodell. If you missed her interview, make sure you hit the archives and catch it. We have author and publisher Dayan Benjamin coming up next. Thank you, Catherine. We're going to have you back.
You're welcome
back anytime. I'm going to check that post and put my 3 cents in there.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks again, Catherine.
Thank you. Y'all have a good one. Thanks.
Okay, good night.
You too.
That was
awesome. I love when she comes on. She has so much passion.
Yeah, me too.
And it just spews out. Exactly. We're going to take a brief break, and then we're about to bring in the man with the pen, author and publisher J.M. Benjamin, into the chat room. And we're going to cut up a little bit. Let him tear the walls down a minute.
Oh, you ain't said a word.
Reality is a dream.
You are now tuned in to the mother greatest.
All right, all right, all right. Yeah.
Yes, yes, we are back, we are back. I am Leisha, I'm here with, you know, my right-hand girl, Miss Tony. We're talking that talk today on Let's Chat, Big Dreams, Small Pockets. We got author and publisher J.M. Benjamin in the chat room. Hey, how are you?
Hey, J.M.
Hey, hey, what's going on, lady?
Oh, how are you?
All right, I'm good, I'm good. I've been better, but I'm getting better.
Oh, well, we got to get you all the way better.
Yeah,
yeah, we got to be the life. You already did the life of the party. We can't have you in here sick in the chat room. Go on over there and get you some tea so that you can feel better. Drop your little halls in there so that we can get this popping.
No, no, I'm just a little injured. I'm not sick. I'm healthy.
Okay.
I'm not just a little injury I'm recovering from, but it's cool.
Okay. Well, we want you to get well soon. Now, for all of those that don't know who you are, which they should, tell everybody a little bit about yourself and your work.
I'm mostly known for my Ride or Die Chick series, which is about Treacherous and Teflon, and then their offspring, Baby Tretch, and his Ride or Die Chick. But 11 years ago, I was still in federal prison, finishing up a 12-and-a-half-year sentence. And I got a two-book deal from a small publishing house, like similar to the type of company that I have myself now. But, I submitted to them. Somebody in the facility had known the owner of the company and had read my manuscript, at the facility and reached out to her, told her that she should check it out. And he asked me, could he shoot it to her? And I let him shoot it to her, and she liked it. And at the time, I had a cell phone when I was in there, and that impressed her. Like, she was saying, like, anybody that has a cell phone in prison has to be about something, like, And I didn't want any money. I just wanted an opportunity, and I was very humble when I wrote her my query letter. And the bio of who I was, and needless to say, my freshman novel, Down in the Dirty, had came out like about 6 months, for like 4.5 months before I came home, and I came home in 2006, which July 3rd I'll be celebrating 10 years, which is definitely looking forward to that. That's for anybody that comes from where I come from. That's huge. But even if you don't, understand, like, I was like considered to be, counted out, like either spend the rest of my life in prison or down the streets, but I got beat the odds. So 10 years is like, 10 years in college. Like, and not to relate it to that, but it's just something, a milestone. But anyway, when I came home, and I walked right into position, and July was an explosive month for me. Up for an award, a couple of awards, and at the time, Wendy Williams was on the radio, WBLS, so I went on there. She chose the book for her book club, and just one door after the next. And but anyway, here it is, 14 books later, a 6th anthology, contributed to 6 anthologies, motivational speaker, mentor, entrepreneur, just on a bookstore, just a host of accolades and achievement and a 10-year span. But I'm just a kid from the projects in Plainfield, New Jersey. So, it's just a blessing to be here. So, but my writing light switch was turned on by this counselor, this elderly Caucasian lady that saw something in me that I didn't even see in myself. And that was in 2001. That's when my writing journey began. I started journaling, and it turned into manuscripts.
That's quite an impressive journey. And salute to you for 10 years. That's just remarkable as well as awesome. So congratulations to you. I know that's a feat to be celebrated, absolutely.
Good. Thank you. Appreciate that. That sounds.
Absolutely. And within that 10 years, you've contributed so much to the industry itself, just as an author, as a mentor, as a publisher. So that is awesome. You know, a lot of times, you know, people need that. They need somebody to be able to give their own testimony, to be able to tell their story. Because, and that's why we do what we do. We allow people to be able to feel that author's passion or that what artist or whichever guest that we have, because you may have somebody that's never read a J.M. Benjamin book. They may not know who J.M. Benjamin is. However, they've sat, they listened to him speak, and then they felt his passion. They're like, I'm going to go find one of his books, and I think I'm just going to read it. And that's just the best part, because that helps that word of mouth start going, and it helps the authors to grow, and it helps create new authors, because somebody may be listening and they might be a little timid about writing. They might have been behind the wall. They might, you know, so many things, and then that would have sparked something in them to help them set their journey up. So we applaud you. We applaud you. Now, you did write a book, though. You write Solid Tips to Success in Self-Publishing, A Simple Guide. Tell us a little bit about that book and why you wrote it.
I wrote that book. I'll tell you why I wrote it first. I wrote it because I couldn't be in like countless of places at the same time. And I was given an opportunity, so I wanted to be able to spread, I wanted to pay it forward. That was the number one reason. But the number two reason was because in my city, writers, aspiring writers, and writers who have, taken that journey of, you know, publishing, have blamed me for their, you know, failure. I'm not going to say failures, because I commend and applaud anyone who takes the initiative to even, you know, have the heart to even try to do it. So for their lack of success, I'm blamed. So I figure I'm going to put my entire recipe and blueprint here. This is what I did. These are the numbers, these are the connects, like this is everything. And then I reached out to the brother who inspired me while I was incarcerated. Not inspired me to write, inspired me in the sense of believing there was bookshelf space for me, and that was Alcide Banks. So I was reading that brother's books when I was still incarcerated. And when I was in the halfway house in Jersey, the brother came and met with me. And he gave me a case of books and to give out to the brothers that were in the halfway house. And I just felt that that was very honorable and admirable of them. So, but anyway, like, I remember him showing me, like, some real motivating tax returns. Like, and I'm like, okay, there's no reason to ever sell drugs ever again. So, anyway, you got two powerful stories in that 10 Solid Tips of Success in Self-Publishing, A Simple Guide. It really is simple. Like, I took my recipe and blueprint from the streets and poured it into literary, and it worked for me. And I'm not bragging. That's what I come from. That's my work history. Never had an on the fly. I was a hustler all my life. So I say that to say, like, I have no degrees or certifications other than experience, hands-on. So with that being said, that book was to silence those who said I wouldn't help them and help them the way that they wanted me to help them, to silence that, and two, to help those who really, you know, wanted to know and were not getting the answers to their questions. Because I hear it all the time, like, the vets don't want to answer, nobody wants to help. Well, I'm not one of those. Like, I was just accused of that. Like, they're listening, like, I'm not one of them. I wrote a book about it. So that's what 10 Solid Tips is about. Like, you go in there, and if you believe that I've done something right in this industry, and this is not to impress anyone, but this is just to impress upon people that it's doable. Like, my books are on Walmart, Target, Barnes & Noble, Stop & Shop. Like, my mom's proud as heck. Like, but I started out under a small independent company. But the number one thing is that I learned the business before I was even signed, and that's very important. Right? That's why I'm still here 11 years later.
Wow. You have had quite an impressive journey.
Yeah, it's dope. It's been dope, but it's still going. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I forgot. It's crazy, but I'm sorry. I was about to say something.
I had a question. We wanted you to help us settle our secrets. You're known for your gritty, gritty teeth. Real.
My book?
Your gritty your gritty pen. And it's real. However, our argument is, who writes the better sex scenes, male authors or female authors? Weigh in on that. What do you think?
I believe that women write the better sex scenes, but I believe that I'm an exception to the rule because I write from a female's perspective. Like my sexual knowledge and experience is like kind of broad, you know, when it comes to women. So, like, I probably could go somewhere like an average dude, male author couldn't. But I believe that women can go places that male writers may not feel comfortable with, or may not feel that they'll be well received in it. Me, like, I write about, female on female, female as a dude, two dudes, one female, like, all that. I mean, it's reality. So I love writing about women. I don't have any interest about writing about dudes, really. Too many male heroes, but yeah, I just believe women could get more busier with that, and it still be, it could be nasty and still be sensual and sexy. Like, a dude, they be like, pornography, the fine line with us is male. But women, you guys could get, more risky than we can with that.
Okay,
so
now this is Tony Gam.
We thank you for
your honesty. Okay, so whoever had the snap in the voice means that they didn't agree. They don't agree with me. and who was that? Who did I not side with?
Well, we think the women write the better scenes because, first and foremost, I think we're more emotional. We really put our hearts and our emotions and our feelings into what we pen. So I think that's where the more sensual, the more, sexual comes in, because we feel, and sometimes you can just write what you want to feel. What I mean?
Yeah, well, male may overlook something so minute, but that little intricate detail will mean everything to a woman reading it. And those are the things that I did. Like, when they drop the ball on that, I'm the dude that picked that ball up and run touchdowns. So that's what I'm saying about my writing. Yeah, like,
let
I'm
trying
to
find out.
Right.
All right. Yeah!
I didn't mean it in that sense, but, I'll take that.
Let me find out, JM, you running some football moves.
Nah, I was saying,
we already know, for picking people up. Let's talk about this picking people up thing, since you put it out there. I mean, what's going on with you and picking up all the folks? And they say you pick up big, small, it don't even matter. Let's talk about this.
That's probably why I'm on bed rest. Like, a couple people said that to me, like, stop checking women up. I think that's why I'm down for the count right now. But, I come from a fun era. Like, I'm from the 80s and the 90s. Like, hating didn't exist. Like, we were motivated when, cats had something, more or better. Like, when we went out to party, like, we had a good time. We wasn't on the walls, screw facing and grinning. Like, we was dancing, like, with big rope chains and Tim's on and Gucci Jags, like, that whole Paid in Full movie. Like, that was my life. Like, that was my wave in Jersey. So, like, I just came home, and I still live the same way I live. I still live a dope boy life with legal money. That's what it is. Like,
right,
so,
man.
Like, yeah, I was a little dude before I got cuffed. And, like, I was picking women up in the air then, like, you know, so, you know, stuff like that. Just enjoying life. Like, I was laid down for a long time. And I said, when I come home, like, I'm going to enjoy life. Like, I do what I want. Like, no whole bar, like, whatever I want. So, that's it. So.
All right, now. All right, JM. Now, this is Tony. I've met you twice at the last two Harlem Book Fairs.
Yeah.
And I can't attest to you picking women up because you didn't pick me up, so I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
You challenge me, like. All right, go ahead. I'm listening, though. Go ahead.
Are you going to be at the fair this year as well? Are you going to be able to attend?
I'll be able to attend. It's just up in the air right now. It really depends on, like, I didn't mention yet about my books to film wave, because that's very important, because that's the next that's the next big wave right now for literary. I wrote what year was that? Kwan and I had merged our companies and put out an anthology called The Mask. And I wrote a short story in there called Checkmate. So I adapted that into a short film. And a partner and I, we got it off the ground. He produced it, put together a phenomenal production team, and we shot it like about 2 years ago. Anyway, the movie's completed, and it was submitted to a rack of film festivals and all. Just recently won the Paul Robeson Award for the Milk Black Film Festival. And it's premiering at the Cityplex out in Newark. But anyway, this wave right here, this books to film, is just opening so many doors for us as authors and indies. Publisher, because I'm signed and I'm still indie, but like it's just the same wave. Like there's a hunger for black films, African American films, and the material is going to come from. Anyway, I just want to put that out there right quick. So with that, it depends on the status of the film, because it's premiering August 3rd. Oh, the Harlem Book Fair is in July, but the Indiana Book Fair is taking place as well, and that's what I'm undecided about. If I'm going to premiere it in Indiana versus not, if it doesn't premiere out there, then I'm going to do the Harlem Book Fair.
Wow. Now, this is Tony Gam. I have a question on what you just was talking about, the desire to watch African-American film. Do you think that that's why the various web series has been so popular and so heavily watched?
Absolutely. And it's crazy that you mentioned that, because, like, I don't necessarily watch. I hear so much about all of them, and I that's cool. Again, like, I commend everybody. But I just be, like, on a different planet when it comes to that. Like, I want it to have a different feeling. Like, I want it to have that feeling that sent us to the movies, like, that had us in the state of mind where we didn't mind paying our money to go to the theaters and watching, you know, some solid black films. Like, I'm a solid writer, and it's going to show, like, how I show on my books, it's going to show on the screen. So, you know, if you guys are able anywhere, you know, it's premiering, if you guys come out, you know, you'll see, and like eventually, because it's going to be hard copies, you'll just see, like, what I'm talking about in regards to, like, quality and content. Like, you know, I'm very stern on that. So, yeah, I believe that everybody is going the internet way because there's not anything really, you know, strong of substance in the theaters. Like, you know, we're getting them in splurts here and there. Like, you know, I just watched a few, like, Race and stuff like that. We get it in splurts. Whereas though every week, you know, every week, everybody else dropping bombs, like box office hits, like, you know, while we're fighting. I know people that are actors and producers and directors, and they all have the same complaint. Good content. Mm-hmm. Like they say, Hollywood suffers from that. You know, New York suffers from that. Atlanta, wherever, you know, Atlanta popping, actually. Like, just, you know, the lack of good content. But meanwhile, there's a slew of dope content in these novels. So I'm just, you know, I'm just trying to start the race, you know, before everybody figure out the race started.
It's interesting that you say that, JM. This is Tony once again, because do you feel that people feel that way because of the saturation of the new authors that have, you know, they were formerly readers last week and now they're authors? Do you think that the saturation that plays a role in the non-content?
The miscommunication and the disenfranchisement and all of that in this industry, the disrespect. Like, there's so much that go on. Like, you know, even though I'm not directly involved, but, like, it's my job to know what's going on. And I'm saying all the stuff is going on, you know, because of these things. And no disrespect, because I became an author. I was an avid reader before I became an author, and I'm still an avid reader. But the difference between when I entered into this arena versus what's going on now is I did my homework, and when I came home, I paid homage to those before me. Like, right, wrong, or indifference, you have to respect who opened these doors and paved this way. You don't have to kiss my behind and put me on a pedestal, but you have to, like, there are certain things people are going to equate to my name when someone does it now. Like, if somebody rips all of the bookstores and beat the streets up and do all of this on the fence and break records of the most books sold at all of this, they're going to say, like, damn, he remind me of J.M. Benjamin. That's what they're going to say. I didn't make that up. That's what happened while I was working. So you can't say, man, F that. Like, man, I'm going to do this F that. You can't say F that.
Right.
Or you can't be readers that chose sides because you thought this author would be mad at you because these two authors don't get along. And then when you become an author, you sabotage. Now there's some sabotage. Like, all of this is going on for no reason. Like, everybody's thinking somebody believes they're better than the other. Like, this is miscommunication, like, I swear. And I'm just giving you something like just I recently dealt with and resolved peacefully and positively, but it was just crazy for no reason. So, but, yeah, like, people are so busy, like, chasing you know, on quantity over quality. Like, I get them out, I get them out, I get this money. Like, it's more become a hustle like the drug game. Like, the drug game is messed up just like the literary game. Like, not the literary game, the urban literary industry. Let me be specific and clear. And I want to be specific and clear. I'm not an urban lit author. Like, I write nonfiction motivational stuff. Like, I'm a writer. Like, you know, but at the end of the day, that's my primary hat because that's what put me on. So even though those are not my issues and beef, they're my issues and beef because that's my industry.
Right.
You know, but people are not everybody is taking the time out to focus on the quality, but you still do have those. Like, I know because I'm cracking their books open, like, you know, and that's important too. Like, you know, people are emerging, writers are emerging into authors and not reading, like, what's rocking right now. Like, they believe that, you know, they get 5 stars on Amazon for, you know, a 99-cent book. And no disrespect to the 99-cent ebook authors, but, like, 5 stars on Amazon don't make five-star authors. Like, a five-star author is a conglomerate of things, like your personality, your presentation, your grind, in addition to your pen. Like, you know, so people are equating dollar signs with status. Five stars with status, like, you know, so that's my take. Like, I focus on quality. My company is a new quality publishing. Like, if I don't sell you quality, I drop you. Like, I just drop 90% of my roster beyond that. So,
wow,
I eat, sleep, and breathe it for real. I don't care what anybody says. I earned the right to say what I say and do what I do. I promise you.
Absolutely. That is so true. Now, JM, I want to ask you, you know, you were in, you said you were behind the wall and you came out, it's been 10 years. Now, has this industry lived up to what you thought it would be, you know? Or what surprises have you encountered?
Even in the midst of everything I just said, I love it. Like, I love it all. Like, I loved it when I was in the streets, like, all of that. Like, even though I shut them, like, I took it all, right, wrong, or indifferent. So it's the same with literary, you know. My good experience definitely outweighed my bad. Like, I don't really even have any bads. Like, you know, I mean, it depends on what your level of bad is. Like, my whole thing is this. I come from a world, like, I make a wrong move, choice, or decision, I could lose my life or freedom. In this business, I could just lose a couple of hours. Like, it's really not that serious, you know. I love it. I've experienced everything. I've experienced loyalty, relationships that transcends books, like, again, Quan, Al-Sadiq Banks, brothers like that, Randy Kears, you know, sisters like Azarel, Nikki Turner, you know, just Laida Clark, like, just a slew of people, like, you know, just genuine love, loyalty. I've received, you know, I've experienced betrayal, you know, and things of that nature. Like, everything, like, growing things, like, you know, like, I take it as it is. I really have no gripes other than the issues that I just spoke about. I've had my most memorable, though, and what is dear to me is the effect that it has on my moms. Because when I was in the streets ripping and running and I caught all that time, that effect that that had on her, like, that contributed to me, like, saying, like, all right, Playboy, it's time to, you know, get your act together. You know, this woman hair going, yeah, facts, like, you know, my hair going from black to salt and pepper to shiny silver, and I'm still up, you know, in this dungeon. You know, my babies are like goo goo gaga to dad when you're coming home. Like, I'm still up in here, like, playing around with what I call prison politics. Like, you know, these jokers in the way, like, they want to run the jail. Like, man, I need to run my life. Can I get my life together? So, you know, the fact that my moms used to come see me, like, you know, I was in federal, I did state and federal time. When I went to the feds, though, when I was in federal, they moved me around. And my mom's lived in Chicago at the time, and she's currently in Indianapolis. But a month didn't go by, like, without her coming to see me. And that didn't include, like, birthdays or when she just wanted to see me, you know. So I made sure, like, when I came home, that I positioned myself to offer, because she's still, like, crying, like, all the time, like, I was like, damn, what can I do? So my career continues to keep my mother's ex tears of sorrow, you know, at a minimum, and keep on, you know, tears of joy at all times. Like, she's mad proud of me, like, everything. Like, I can tell you countless of stories about that. I don't have enough time, but yeah, like, just that, like, those are the things, like, winning awards and my mom coming up accepting it with me. And her, I got to tell you two stories. So, one with the Essence bestsellers list, she subscribed to Essence, and she called me, like, why you're not on the list. Like, I know you can write better than them. Your book is better than them. I'm like, Ma, relax. Like, I got more money than those authors on that list. Like, I don't care about no list. You know, like, really, it went just like that. And I said, but you want me to be on the list? I'm going to make the list. And I banged the list with the Ride or Die Chick joint, part one. And that right there, like, when she called me, like, her reaction was priceless. Like, that's why I wanted the list, not because the list validated me as a writer. And then another story, again, she was subscribed to Black Expressions, and which is now something else. But shout out to Carol Mackey, who was the realm on Black Expression. My mom's was like, I'll be telling the people at the church they could get your books. They asked me, are you on Black Expression? I'm like, oh, my goodness. So, like, I read Carol Mackey. And, you know, Carol meets my mom, and we're talking, and Carol tells me to submit something, and she loves it. And, in Black Expression, you know, my mom's got the catalog, like, you know, stuff like that. You know, making headlines, like New York Times, not New York Times bestsellers list, New York Times about my life. Like, that's different stuff, like, you know. So, you know, it's things like that. You know, that's what it's about for me.
Well, it sounds like, Jam, this is Tony, it sounds like throughout it all, no matter what, your mom has been your biggest supporter. Hats off and shouts out to her.
Shout out to all of the Ride or Die chicks. My mom's is like the ultimate riders. Like, there's not really that many left. I mean, they're around in the world, but it's not that many left. Like, yeah, shout out my mom's. Reverend
There's
Jean
nothing
Reverend.
Like a mother's love. There's nothing like a mother's love. I can attest to that.
Yeah, if y'all listening, go to her Facebook page and say, Reverend Word, JM sent me. Oh, she gonna go crazy. Yeah, anybody listening? go to Jean Word, JEANWORD, and post that on her page. She gonna blow my phone up, I promise you.
Now, I have a question for you, JM. This is Leisha, because you've talked about your journey from going behind the wall for the time you spent there. Have you, like, came home? Did you ever, like, sit your mom down and, like, literally, like, apologize? Like, you know, when you go through so many things, you never really realize what it is at the time. But then when you come out of it, did you actually, like, sit down with her and say, Mom, I know you did because you just love your mom. So I know you told her you appreciate her. But did you sit down and just have that talk with her?
Awesome. All right. So he trying to start something. So, all right.
Oh, man.
No, because I can't my mom's and I, we did a speaking engagement together. I can't even be in the same room with her when she's talking about me. Like, but we discussed it, like, at a speaking event, which I didn't know she was going to be speaking at. It was the Women Empowering Women group, and they had extended it to and men, too. So I was the first male speaker to ever speak at the masses of the Women Empowering Women group in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very spiritual, religious of women, and they had saw how I spoke about my mom's on social media, and they reached out to her without me knowing and invited her, like, to introduce me. And that introduction turned into a ceremony and an apology to me. Like, so now I'm over there choking up. Like, man, I'm not even, because I'm here to speak at the event. I'm not even gonna be able to speak. So, I swear it turned into church. And I'm Muslim, like, and I love my mom. I grew up in a church, but I'm Islamic faith, but So it's time for me to speak, and I go up there, and I begin to, like, you know, extend my apology. To, like, I have the footage. Like, it's never been seen. Like, I told my mom, like, when I die, like, leak this, like, show this. Like, I can't show this to the world. I was so emotional. But, yeah, it was just a time, like, where it just came, like, unexpected conversation. It was just unspoken words. And it came out when, you know, God wanted it to come out. And it was, you know, just looking back, it was just dope. And it was just a cleansing for the both of us. Because as a writer, like, I don't have that story. Like, I've always known I wanted to be a writer since I was 4 years old or anything like that. No disrespect to writers who, you know, that's their story. But that's not my story. Like, I didn't know that was a part of my journey. But looking back, I can remember things from when I was, like, 2, 3, 4 years old, you know. So, you know, a memory, you know, it was instilled in me to be able to write this so I can go journey back, you know, and create a character that experienced something at that age that might have been traumatic or something. You follow me?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and sometimes you kind of need that closure, not necessarily closure, but you need some definition about, you know, those things that you've gone through. And it sounds like some cleansing even. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like that's what you guys experienced.
Yeah. Well, sometimes people come home from prison and don't apologize to their loved ones, like just keep on rocking and then go back, and their loved ones still rock with them. So, you know, like there was a time where, like, you know, our black women, you know, rode for brothers strong. Like, you know, families were strong in spite of the, you know, incarceration, temporary incarceration, or even, like, you know, lifetime incarceration. But brothers were coming home and just, like, you know, doing sisters dirty, like, you know, decade after decade, and, you know, and now this year, so women are tired of that, like, man, like, you know, like what they call jail talk, like.
Right.
And just, you know, prison just, man, it just puts a strain and destroys so many, like, relationships and families, I swear. Like, you know, it's crazy.
That's true. That's so true.
Yeah. But
I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, but there is a disclaimer in there, like, that they provide you with everything. You can go right or you can go left, right? They provide you. It's just that the masses go left, right? The masses just go left.
Because
I went left. I started out left. Like, the first 5 years, I was left, like. I was trapping in the prison. Like, I was making almost the type of money I was making in the streets, but I was almost seeing that, like, in prison. Like, you know, like, it was serious.
Wow.
Like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you could still wear clothes when I went to prison. Like, you could still have your jewelry. Like, so, you know, like, so I.
So when you came home, how difficult was it for you to transition into society, you know, a society that still labeled you as a prisoner? Were you still left for a minute before you decided to go right?
When I came home?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not. I was already focused before I came home. But before I went, yeah, definitely. See, here's the thing, because I'm always asked that question, like, when I do interviews and stuff, like newspapers, and they want to know what's the difference between me and those that went back. And the difference is really, like, often, like, everybody always talks about what they're going to do when they get out. But not many really do what they need to do while they're still in to ensure once they're out, they don't return. See, I knew what my problem was. Like, I didn't have a drug addiction, alcohol addiction. That wasn't my wave. Like, my wave was criminality, like getting money. I knew I was addicted to that. Like, I've been in the street since 12 years old, like on my own, like me and my brother, like getting it. Like, I, like, that's like some whole other story, you know, for like down the line. But,
right.
I say that to say, I knew that if I didn't work on those things, I knew I was going back. Because, like, one, like, there's only one way I know, like, just like how I did in literary, like, take an idea, you know, get some capital and execute it. Like, Like, and if I would have went to the streets, it would have been like however it would have turned out. But eventually my ultimate goal would have been to, like, rise to the top. Like, and then coming home, my city was infested and still is currently infested with, gangs. So, like, I'm not in a gang. I would have to come home and be double OG, triple OG. Like, I would have to run something. Like, no little kid can't tell you what to do. Like, my children are in their 20s. Like, no little 20-year-old can't tell me what to do. So they would have to do one of two things, kill me or tell on me to go back to prison. So, like, I knew I had to broaden my options, but I didn't know it was in writing because, mind you, I've never had a job in my life. I've never had a 9-to-5 in my life. My entire work history consists of packing bags, shoveling the snow, raking leaves, collecting cans, scrapping, selling drugs, selling books, soon to be selling movies. That's my work history right there. Like, there's no paper route, Burger King, McDonald's, none of that. So I had to figure out something. Like, so I was always coming up with entrepreneur plans inside the facility. And the counselor seen that in me, and I was in some of her groups, and she made me a co-facilitator because she said dudes participated whenever I participated. Like, I was this impressionable type of dude. And the COs used to be telling her that I'm trying to fake her out and manipulate her, but she never bought into none of that. You know, and at the time, like, I was off that wave. Like, I would have, you know, but she didn't see that in me. And ultimately, I went to lock up over a dispute. Like, somebody owed me some bread over some drugs, and, like, I handled my business and went to lock up. And she came to see me, and she still believed in me, even in lock up. And, like, you know, she gave me the notepad and told me to journal because something had me angry. And I'm like, I'm not angry, like. They started, I finished it. Like, I'm not a punk. And she went into, like, this changed my life, and I still live my life like this. Like, not to say I live a perfect life because, like, you know, it's still in me, but I just try to make the best decisions. But I don't do anything illegal. I don't get money illegally whatsoever, and I haven't, like, since I've been home. But she said, I told her, I said, I don't like to be disrespected. And she said, disrespect is what you perceive it to be. And if somebody calls you a punk and they don't know you, like, then what does it matter? And she was like, life is like 1090. Like, she hit me with the 1090, and I'm like, I don't like on some Scooby-Doo. Like, and she just like, you know, she was like, you know, life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Right. And, like, I really look like that word, like, because that 10% could make that 90 make you explosive, like. You know, so I was focused on that, but nah, I don't have nothing in the streets. I'm not the OG, like, none of that. Like, I'm none of that.
Wow, that's awesome. Now, damn, is she aware of your success today?
Nah, I knew you was going to ask me that. Nobody can find her. Well, you wouldn't even believe her name. Like, it sounds like a TV show. Her name was Irene Doolittle from Holly, Pennsylvania. That sounds crazy, huh?
Oh.
Irene Doolittle, and she looked like a Mrs. Doolittle, too. Like, and her husband name was Frank Doolittle.
Wow.
Definitely. I've tried. I've had media try to reach out to her, and they're saying, like, the facility wasn't forthcoming because she no longer worked there. And then they said they believed they had tracked her daughter down, but she didn't want to talk, so they never really got out the gate as well. So,
how many years has that been since you've last seen her?
I've been home 10 years, and then I had to go transfer out in the state. I was in there for another year, so that's 11 and a half. Probably like 14 years, 13, 14 years. Yeah, something like that.
I'm so proud.
Yeah, well,
look at you. Well, all right.
It's not like this interview. People, like, you know, I was just saying, like, depending on, because I go off of vibe and energy, and I was like, depending on the question is going to determine the vibe of the interview, like, you know, and I'm saying, like, you know, these are really good questions that gets me, because I don't really talk about all this. I've talked about some, but, like, there's still, like, so many layers of, like, what it consists of to just maintain in this business. Like, everybody has their story within their story of being the author that they are, whether they're just getting into this game or been in it. Like, if you're just getting into it, the growing pains to get to that stage is your story, you know. So my story just continues and all, you know, I mean, from everything, like, you know, destructions of relationships to making choices, career over personal, you know, so on and so forth. And, like, at the end of the day, I eat, sleep, and breathe writing. And I choose it over everything right now. That's just where I'm at with it.
Well, we're happy you're enjoying your interview, but, you know, you can't leave the chat room without shouting out your newest work, because we want to make sure our listeners go out there in one click and get that pre-order going.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about
your new
work.
You out there twerking that pen? Tell us a little bit about that, yes.
Okay. So, one I can tell you, my book, On the Run with Love, Carl Weber, is releasing this. It's scheduled for June 28th. It's a book that I put out in 2008, actually on my anniversary, July 3rd of 2008, it came out. But at that time, the book, I just didn't do anything with it, and I wound up beefing it up like another 30-plus thousand. It's a dope story, On the Run with Love. It's about a dude. He's not a gangster. He's not a baller. He's a player. He makes his money by womanizing, with womanizing behavior. And, like, he mean in the bed. And that's what he uses to get his bread. It's not an erotica book. It's an urban tale. But it's called On the Run with Love because just as he hang up his player gloves and buckle down, like, his fast come back to home, and his lady, she green, she don't come from that. So she on the run with love. So I'll leave that there. But my baby coming out on July 26th, watch out for the big girls, come out. I'm the Carl Weber. It's going to be dope.
Of course it is.
Huh?
I said, of course it is.
It's definitely, like, I love writing about the sexy plus size women, the BBWs, like, because I love writing about strong, powerful, independent women, like gangster chicks, baller chicks, and all that, like, and like BBWs, like, they just represent this sense of strength, like, these, you know, these powerful women, like these Amazon women type. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, I really have fun writing about this, and they're gay. They're gay women, and but they use their sexuality to lure dudes in, because they're extortioners. That's what they are. But they're business by day, gangster by night. So look for those. But I'm also dropping. After those drop, I get to drop an indie joint, which I've been working on. Like, it's the longest book I ever took to write. That's because so many other projects came before it. But it's called The Grinders. And it's the first of a series. I don't know how many books it's going to be yet. But, like, two out of three are in position now. But it's called The Grinders. I'll give y'all a snippet. How much time do we have? I don't want to delay anything.
You good. We love snippets and exclusives.
Yeah, all right, so I'm going to
get
So
we're going to get this exclusive.
Yeah, no, this is exclusive, facts. Yeah, definitely. So it opens up in this, like, half-Benji motel in South Plainfield, New Jersey, which is on the outskirts of the city that I'm from. In the bed, the brother Demetrius Grinder with the chills, and he's vomiting in the bed. In the bathroom is his wife, Tamika Grinder. She's bent over on the toilet. She has chills. She's vomited as well. But they're not vomiting and have chills for the same reason. He has the AIDS, she's pregnant. So
oh.
That's the way. Yeah, I love that you react like that. I'd be hoping for that reaction, right? Like, ta-da, like, yeah, but so, all right, so, finished.
That was, ooh.
Yeah, so now, she writes her mouth, she comes out of the bathroom, she checks on her husband. Then she picks up the AK-47, and she goes to the motel window and do the classic look out the window like Malcolm X, because she's waiting for the media. She's waiting for one news reporter with a cameraman. Because she,
mm-hmm.
because they're wanted by every law enforcement in existence for
mm-hmm.
everything, thing like a kidnapper, an extortion, murder, but it's not what it all seems. So they're telling the story in this motel. So when the story starts, when Tamika starts the story, it
mm-hmm.
opens up to where it all begins. But this couple
mm-hmm.
was America's dream. And became the country's worst nightmare. Like,
oh.
he was a basketball star. And
mm-hmm.
she was an educated sister. They met in college. Like, it's not no dope boy story. Like,
mm-hmm.
what happens is, should I give y'all more? Nah, I'm
you got us all over here riveted to your story. You better come on, JM. Don't let me have to pick you up now.
Right.
You can't just be dropping stuff off and then be like,
never mind.
It's like, come on.
Hold on, let me think of this enough. Okay, I know where I could take you. I know where I could take you. So, but he's a basketball star, so him and his roomie, like, they like slaying everything on the campus. Like, they players. Like, they young dudes. Like, they stars. And
mm-hmm.
But when he runs into her, like, she takes his breath away, like, and, like, he done, like, so they become exclusive. And the school wins the championship and has to play, no, the school has to go to this championship in Atlanta. And they win. And they go celebrate at the strip club. But, like, he really into her. Like, he not into the strip club or not like that. And the sister approaches him. And he, like, you know, not interested. And she won't take no for an answer or what have you. And, you know, she's all over him, and he has a drink, and she slips something in his drink, and
oh.
he goes out, and, like, she went in his pants, like, and slid her thong to the side, like, and hopped on him. Like,
oh,
so he
man.
Knew something happened. So now they checking out the hotel, right? As he checking out the TV in the lobby, he sees her picture flash across the screen. And the title says, Local Stripper and Sex. And charged with infecting patrons with HIV virus.
Oh.
He looking at this thing. So now he has to make a decision because he know, like, she hopped on him last night unprotected.
Uh-huh.
So he has to make a decision. What does he do? Like, he got baby girl back. Like, they're just boyfriend and girlfriend back in school at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how they get married, like, you're not even going to find that out until you read the book. But
man, JM, you teasing
no,
us. When is this coming out?
I'm going to give you enough to want to say.
Now, we're expecting copies of this here book because you keep teasing us. So we're going to be expecting 2 copies of this here book for our pain and suffering. Pain and suffering,
I
like that, bitch.
I'm going to gift y'all that.
Oh,
but
that sounds good.
He decides to tell her, and I'm going to leave it there.
Oh,
damn. Oh, hold on. I got to give you one more piece. He can't afford the medication, and that's
ooh.
When they go on a crime wave. She ride with him to help save his life. That's what I'll give you.
Oh.
That's all.
Oh, that's rather didactic.
So just know it's facts. Like, you know, I get that. I couldn't just no book one is in motion. It's done. Like,
yeah, this sounds like a blockbuster.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that it's well received. Open.
It sounds like it. Definitely received. These little nuggets you just gave me, Alicia, was totally well
right.
received.
That's what's up. I'm glad. Thank you.
No, thank you. Absolutely. We appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, see, we got something to look forward to, Leash.
Absolutely. We call those snacks. Nobody turn down a snack now. Everybody likes to eat. Nobody turn down a snack.
Absolutely. But, Jan, we have so enjoyed you here in the chat room. I can't believe the time has gone. It's like we're just sitting up in here chatting amongst each other, and it's been so much fun as well as informative.
Definitely just vibing out, definitely. That's what I like. That's how I like it to go.
Yes, and it just flowed. We just went in different directions, but it all flowed together, you know?
Definitely.
Absolutely. You are welcome back anytime. Anytime you want to come and just chill and vibe with us in the chat room, just let one of us know. We'll be glad to let you on in. We'll leave you a little key in the potted plant outside the front. Come in, make yourself at home, sit in your little chair, enjoy yourself.
Nah, definitely. I'll let you ladies go. I'm going to just let everybody know how they can get with me on all of my social sites at JM Benjamin, Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, JM Benjamin. And the movie page is Moves We Make the Movie on Facebook. And on Instagram is Moves_We_Make_Movie. So just wanted to shout that out real quick. But definitely enjoyed you guys' show. And you can hit me up anytime for any updates.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate you, truly, even if you didn't pick us up.
Real fun. Y'all have a good evening.
Okay,
you
too,
Sam. Bye-bye. Get better soon.
Bye. Awesome, Lee.
I
enjoyed that.
Yes. You was on one, see? You was on a roll. I let you just do what you do. I just sat back. I said, she on a roll. All right, go ahead, see.
I love talking to him. You know, I had such a pleasure meeting him at the Hall of Book Fair, and I hope we get to see him this year. You know, the last time I was leaving the fair and he was coming in, I'm like, damn, let me find out you're leaving and I'm coming in. I'm leaving and you're coming in. But he has always been such a pleasure when I meet him. He's taking a couple of pics. And I hope you get the chance to meet him as well when you come here, Leash. So, but this interview was all of that, girl. I love his journey, his passion,
his passion,
mom.
Yes. It just seeps out every word that he says. He from start to finish. When he talks about every aspect of his life, you know, our topic was big dreams and small pockets. And even at all points of his life, you can feel the passion for him to keep going, and just do what he do. So awesome interview. If you're just tuning in and you missed the interview with author and publisher J.M. Benjamin, make sure you go back and check out our archives. We have two fabulous guests today. We appreciate you guys tuning in, and we will see you next week.
Yes. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week, and have a great weekend. And happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
Yes, happy Father's Day. We're going to head out with the Furnace Family. I'm Done, featuring G.I. by the fabulous Kimber Nicole, and we're out.
Good night, everybody.
Calling my phone cause you won't get an answer. I wish you would leave me alone cause I swear I'm just past you. You can spend your time with them other girls, I ain't worried about it. Don't play them games with the next one, I don't wanna talk about it. This is the way I feel, and can't nothing change it. The way I feel, don't try to explain it. You would have been there. This is the way I feel. It's the way that it's gonna be. So hurry down. I'm washing my hands, cause falling in and out of love just wasn't part of the plan. I'm done. I'm done. Yeah. No more crying. no more sitting around for you. You can't tell me nothing, I know how I held this thing down for you. You should have been a man about it and told the truth. Now you're talking about you wanna do right, nigga, what's to you?
This is the way I feel. There ain't nothing changing the way I feel. Don't try to explain it. No, now you really don't care. If you did, then you would have been there.
This is the way I feel.
It's the way that it's gotta be. In and out of love just wasn't part of the plan. I'm done. I'm done. Oh, yeah.
I'm glued to my cell phone. I try to call you and all I'm hearing is dial tone. That lets me know that you're starting to slip away from me. I'm losing myself. Can somebody please pray for me? Cause we've been here over and over. That was from season to season. But I can't blame you, cause I gave you the reason. I know sometimes I made you feel like you was underachieving. The tables turned, now I'm sick cause you leaving. And for whatever it's worth, I'ma do whatever to make this thing work. Even if that chance is a small fraction. Not giving up hope is not just a quote when I speak. Girl, I'm really trying to make this shit happen. As time flies by, all your wounds will heal. I know you